could say it elevates the quality of the U.S.-Taiwan military relationship.
Beijing is not saying that at all. This is Wednesday, the 30th of December, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, we'll take you to California, one of the epicenters of the COVID pandemic. The shipping and storage of one brand of COVID vaccine may be chilling its delivery, and a London tailor has gone robotic. All of that and more on today's VOA Asia. China has expressed its anger after U.S. President Donald Trump signed into law measures to further bolster support for Taiwan and Tibet, which had been included in a $2.3 trillion pandemic aid and spending package. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Zhao Lijian said Beijing was opposed to both the Taiwan Assurance Act of 2020 and the Tibetan Policy and Support Act of 2020. China has watched with growing alarm as the United States has stepped up its backing for Chinese claimed Taiwan and its criticism of Beijing's rule in remote Tibet, further straining a relationship under intense pressure over trade, human rights, and other issues. David Sachs, a research fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, called the Taiwan Assurance Act of 2020 more symbolic of the two.
The Taiwan Assurance Act is mostly couched in the sense of Congress language, so it is not binding. And it reiterates our support for Taiwan's development of asymmetric defense capabilities and its meaningful participation in international organizations. And that is already U.S. policy. So it's not asking really for a shift in U.S. policy or even really forcing a shift in U.S. policy.
Timothy Heath, RAND Corporation's senior defense researcher, surmised the act incentivizes and encourages the U.S. government to deepen and broaden its relationship with Taiwan.
The act authorizes and encourages the State Department and Department of Defense to sell arms and components and to include Taiwan in military exercises. So you could say it elevates the quality of the U.S.-Taiwan military relationship with the goal of helping Taiwan defend itself more effectively against a possible Chinese attack. And then in addition, there are some requirements for the State Department to step up its efforts to raise Taiwan's profile in international organizations were appropriate and consistent with the One China policy.
Heath also explains that one provision of the Tibetan Policy and Support Act of 2020 takes immediate effect.
It prohibits the State Department from opening another consulate in China until China authorizes the U.S. government to have a consulate in Tibet. So that's one important provision. And then the second one is this act authorizes sanctions and punishments on officials in China who are responsible for some of the extremely repressive policies that are going on there.
The act also includes language about the selection of the next Dalai Lama. David Sachs explained.
There is reason for us to be worried that China will seek to handpick a successor who is friendly toward Beijing because it did that with the Panchen Lama. And this law really lays the foundation for sanctioning Chinese officials should they interfere in the selection process. And it also provides money for programs with Tibet. So $8 million per year through 2025 to promote sustainable development projects in Tibet, $6 million per year for projects in Nepal and India aimed at the Tibetan community. So that really does lay down important markers and provide funding for pursuing U.S. objectives.
President Donald Trump leaves office January 20th when President-elect Joe Biden takes the oath of office. How might these two acts affect Sino-U.S. relationships? Timothy Heath adds.
I mean, these acts are not going to fundamentally force China to change its policy. It will add a penalty that China will pay for continuing its policies, but I think Beijing will want to demonstrate to the world that it has no intent to bend to America's demands and will, in fact, as it's done in numerous other issues, try to demonstrate that it will maintain the course. So I expect that the repression in Tibet will continue, this arm-twisting behavior towards Taiwan that will continue as well. Though, again, they have limited options regarding actually forcing Taiwan to come to the table. So long as Taiwan-U.S. relationship gets warmer and stronger, it does increase the risk for Beijing.
Timothy Heath is a senior defense researcher with the RAND Corporation, and David Sachs is a senior research fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. This is VOA Asia. The United States topped 19 million COVID cases Monday as hospital intensive care units remain filled to overflowing across much of California, a major U.S. coronavirus hotspot. Flora Bradley Watson reports.
The United States has topped 19 million cases of COVID-19 as one of the country's worst hit states is set to extend its lockdown. Hospitals across the whole country have been strained to the brink all month, and California has been hit the hardest. Intensive care units in the state, now a major U.S. hotspot, are full to overflowing. This past week, California has been averaging 230 COVID deaths a day. Governor Gavin Newsom said restrictions on gatherings and business activities would almost certainly be renewed for another 3 weeks, as he warned things are likely to get worse after the holiday season.
Look, you need nothing more example than the total number of passengers on airplanes nationwide that only suggests that we are going to see an increase in cases across this country, not just in the state of California, as it relates to these travel advisories that were not heeded clearly by everybody.
For now, California residents are under some of the toughest restrictions in the U.S. They're told to remain at home and avoid travel except for grocery shopping, medical appointments, and daily exercise, while restaurants are limited to takeout and bars are closed altogether. The country as a whole has reported 333,000 deaths since the pandemic began, and as of Sunday, 118,000 people were in U.S. hospitals with the disease.
That was Flora Bradley Watson. Because the first coronavirus vaccine approved for use in the U.S. needs to be transported in ultra-cold conditions using dry ice, that has created some unique challenges. As Licia Bacalets report in this story, narrated by Anna Rice, transporting the Pfizer vaccine has led to a huge demand for dry ice.
Dry ice is the solid form of carbon dioxide, and it can be as cold as minus 78 degrees Celsius.
This is a pellet. This is what they're going to use. It is white. As you see, it is smoking. You can see that smoke come off of there. So that's dry.
Harry Game is the owner of Game & Sons, an Ohio company that has been producing dry ice for decades. He says demand for his product has risen 10 to 15% in recent weeks. That's because dry ice must be used to keep the Pfizer COVID vaccine in extremely cold temperatures during transportation, at minus 70 degrees Celsius. Pfizer transports its new vaccine in specially designed boxes. Each box needs a new supply of dry ice every 5 days.
One challenge is that the box cannot be opened very frequently. If you open the box, that dry ice would sublimate more quickly, right? Because the temperature gets warmer.
The other problem is high levels of carbon dioxide can be deadly, especially on board airplanes.
Planes are equipped to handle a certain amount of air exchange in the aircraft as it's flying. But you don't want to have so much on the aircraft that it would overpower that ability to display, to replenish the oxygen levels in the aircraft.
Despite the rise in demand for dry ice, experts say there's plenty to go around.
So when we looked at the system, we're pretty confident that we can meet that capacity.
The only alternative to dry ice is special refrigerators with ultra-cold settings. Some hospitals and research centers in large cities have those. And companies that make these refrigerators say they're seeing a rise in demand as well.
We literally have added probably about 50% more people into our organization. And we went out and, you know, bought $2-3 million worth of material so that we can actually get out in front of it. Now, the demand has clearly outstripped even what we thought was going to be our solution.
Other coronavirus vaccines are much less problematic. The Moderna vaccine can be transported in minus 20 degrees Celsius temperatures, which will make it much easier to transport to more remote areas. For Lisa Bokalets in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has issued a message of hope and healing for the new year to the hundreds of millions of people worldwide whose lives have been shattered by the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Chief Guterres does not hide his sorrow at the difficulties engendered by this once-in-a-century pandemic. COVID-19, he says, has upended the lives of millions, plunging the world into suffering and grief. He describes 2020 as a year of trials, tragedies, and tears, a year that continues to create havoc and claim new victims as COVID-19 rages on. The pandemic, he says, has increased poverty, inequality, and hunger to new heights.
But the new year lies ahead, and with it we see rays of hope. People extending a helping hand to neighbors and strangers, frontline workers giving their all, scientists developing vaccines in record time, countries making new commitments to prevent climate catastrophe.
Guterres says climate change and the pandemic are crises not easily overcome. He says it will take enormous work, commitment, and above all, a willingness of all people to work together for the same goal.
If we work together in unity and solidarity, these rays of hope can reach around the world. That's the lesson of this most difficult year. Together, let's make peace among ourselves and with nature, tackle the climate crisis, stop the spread of COVID-19, and make 2021 a year of healing.
Guterres says 2021 can be a year of healing divisions that were made worse from the deadly infection and broken economies if people work together. He says the best New Year's resolution for 2021 is to heal the planet. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. While international travel is still limited from the coronavirus outbreak, it did not stop this London tailor from conducting suit fittings for foreign clients. Huntsman, the tailor shop on London's Savile Row, has its clients in the South Korean capital of Seoul. The 171-year-old tailor is using a telepresence robot named Mr. Hammock to conduct the remote fittings with its high-resolution camera. Dario Cornera, the head cutter for Huntsman, says using the robot can be more beneficial in some areas than being there in person.
Been very helpful, even more helpful than actually being there, is being able to take still images of what you're seeing. So rather than trying to remember what you saw, you've got an actual image there.
Even with the unique measures to reach clients all over the world, the historic tailor still has been negatively affected by the pandemic. Taj Full, the head of retail, says they're expecting sales to be down 65% this year.
The biggest impact for us has been the shut doors. I think had the closed doors and people been able to travel, we would have seen minus 20s, minus 30s. But for us, when the lockdown initially happened, I think it was quite a big shock in March for us to see how that reflected. Just on our chart, the fall off from March 23rd was instantaneous. It was like a light switch had been turned off.
So far, the teleporting bespoke service is only available in Seoul, but will be available in Shanghai, Beijing, Hong Kong, and Singapore soon. After losing her job of 17 years at a research company, Rani Nirwitawati decided to take her knowledge of the food and beverage business to start selling food online from her own kitchen. Nirwitawati found an online version of the Punanjan Sunday Market just days after she lost her job. Apart from providing an income, Nirwitawati says the Sunday market is proving her more experience in managing a new business.
For me, there are a lot of uses and benefits joining the online bazaar because I can learn network and my knowledge and products are increasingly recognized.
Besides food, fashion products and arts are also being sold on the Sunday market. After her office cut her monthly wage in half during the pandemic, Parahita Satiti joined the Sunday market selling traditional Javanese kabaya. Satiti says she's hopeful in her new business venture.
Of course, this is a new business, and we haven't yet had a break-even point. But seeing the enthusiasm and orders from the Pahinggan Sunday market, I think it'll be a promising business for me.
The Sunday market is held once every 35 days and follows the five-day Javanese calendar. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington.